Welcome back to the Deep Dive, everyone. In our last exploration, we really got into some of those ethical considerations that come up in personnel development. And it's important stuff.
Absolutely.
But now we're going to kind of shift our focus to the people who are, right there on the front lines doing the work.
Yeah.
The personnel developers themselves. So think of this deep dive as really understanding, the skills, the responsibilities, and the journey of the folks who dedicate themselves to helping other people grow professionally within an organization.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really insightful. And I think this chapter we're looking at from the Handbook of Personnel Development by Mueller, Vorbergen, and Redell is going to give us a really structured way to look at what personnel developers actually do day to day.
Right.
The competencies they need to be successful in their roles. And, even just the different paths that someone might take to become a personnel developer and then continue to develop in that profession.
Cool. Yeah. So our mission today for you, the learner, is to, paint a clear picture of this really vital role within organizations. We're going to be highlighting the main goals and tasks that personnel developers tackle, the essential skills and competencies that they need to possess. And we'll also touch upon how someone typically gets into this field and the importance of ongoing learning.
Yeah.
So by the end of our discussion, you should have a really solid grasp of what it means to be a personnel developer and why this role is just so crucial for companies to succeed. Okay, let's dive right in. So starting with the fundamental aims and activities that, define what personnel development really is.
Absolutely. And the chapter starts by outlining these really core objectives. And I think, at the heart of it, personnel development is about empowering and, just as importantly, motivating employees so they can meet, their current job demands, but also be prepared for what's coming in the future.
Right? Yeah. The future of work, it's always changing.
Yeah. And the challenges and opportunities that that will inevitably bring. And I think what's interesting is the chapter really emphasizes this, evolution, right? Like, there was a time when personnel development was seen as primarily fixing problems.
Yeah.
It was reactive. You wait until there's a skill gap and then you try to address it.
Yeah, like troubleshooting mode.
Yeah, exactly. But I think what they're really underscoring now is this growing importance of a proactive stance, right?
Yeah.
In today's world where things are shifting so rapidly, anticipating what those future skill needs are going to be and fostering a culture of continuous growth, that's absolutely vital for organizations to stay competitive and adaptable.
Right. You can't just wait for something to break. You got to get ahead of it.
Exactly. And, I thought it was really interesting. They even point to the corona pandemic as a really powerful example of why this ability to adapt and prepare for the unexpected is, not just nice to have, it's mission critical.
Oh, yeah. Think about it, right? It was almost mind-boggling how quickly organizations had to pivot and how crucial it became almost overnight to have employees who were adaptable.
Yeah, I mean, think about all the changes that happened in such a short period of time. Remote work, new technologies, shifts in consumer behavior. It was a huge test of organizational agility.
It really was. Yeah. And, on that note, the chapter also digs into what can be a bit of a tricky area, identifying those development needs of employees. And the authors make this point that these needs are inherently subjective.
Yeah. And I think that's so important to remember, what one person sees as a crucial area for development, another person might view it completely differently, right?
Right. And, it made me think back to an earlier chapter. I can't remember which one it was specifically, but I think it talked about this potential disconnect between how individuals see their own skills and development needs, their self-perception versus how maybe their colleagues or managers perceive them.
Right. Like, you might have someone who feels like they're totally ready to lead a team, but their manager sees a need for them to, develop their communication skills further or something like that.
Exactly right. So you can have someone who's feeling pretty confident and then the organization saying, well, hold on a second, not so fast. And that just seems like, a potential source of friction right there.
Oh, for sure. And I think navigating that gap between self-perception and how others are seeing you, that is a really significant skill for personnel developers. The chapter really frames that process of bringing those perspectives closer together as a vital learning journey.
I like that.
Not just for the individual employee, but for the organization as a whole,
Yeah, makes sense.
It's about fostering that shared understanding of strengths and areas for growth.
It really is. And it makes you realize that, this role, being a personnel developer, it requires some real finesse.
Yeah, for sure.
Diplomacy, skillful communication, just to navigate those kinds of conversations that could be potentially sensitive.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. It's about creating a safe space for those conversations to happen. Okay, so another really interesting angle that the chapter brings up is this idea of aligning development needs with something pretty fundamental, self-actualization. And they're drawing on Maslow's hierarchy of needs here. So, for anyone who might not be familiar, self-actualization is right up there at the top of that pyramid. It's about, reaching your full potential as a human being, becoming the best version of yourself. And the chapter basically suggests that once those, more basic needs are met, like, physiological needs, safety, belonging, that's when this desire for personal growth and self-actualization becomes this incredibly powerful motivator.
Makes sense. You got to have the foundation before you can build the penthouse, right?
Exactly. You're not going to be focused on self-actualization if you're worried about where your next meal is coming from. But once those basic needs are taken care of, then people start to think about, okay, what's next for me? How can I grow? How can I reach my full potential?
Right. So then, if those aspirations for growth and those development needs aren't being addressed within a company, what happens? What's the consequence?
The chapter is pretty clear on this one. They say those employees are likely to start looking for opportunities elsewhere.
Makes sense.
And I think that really underscores the strategic importance of personal development, right? It's not just about improving skills, it's about keeping your best people.
Yeah, retention.
Exactly. If you're not invested in helping your people grow and reach their potential, they're going to find someone who is.
Right, because there are plenty of companies out there who are looking for talented people and are willing to invest in their development.
Exactly. So it really highlights those high stakes involved in getting personnel development right. Now, I think it's worth mentioning that the chapter also touches on how personnel development is actually organized within companies.
Right, because I was looking at the outline and it mentions the organization of personnel development, but then our chapter doesn't really dive into like specific organizational charts or anything like that.
Yeah, it's more about those general structures.
But can we kind of make some inferences based on, just typical organizational models and maybe what we know from other sources?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, typically, personal development is going to be a function within the human resources department. So you might have like a centralized team that's dedicated specifically to personnel development
Right.
and they serve the entire organization. Or you might have a more decentralized model where the personnel development function is embedded within different business units or
Yeah.
departments.
Or even some kind of hybrid approach.
Yeah, exactly. Where
Yeah.
maybe some aspects are centralized and others are more specific to individual units. And, while we don't have those detailed organizational charts here, I think it's important to keep in mind that the way a company structures its personnel development is going to have a big impact on how effectively it can actually plan and implement its initiatives.
Right, because you can imagine that a very large company with lots of different departments and locations might need a different approach than, say, a smaller, more specialized firm.
Absolutely. One size doesn't fit all when it comes to organizational structure.
Right. Okay, so let's move on to what seems to be a really central focus of this chapter, the requirements for the personnel developers themselves. So what kind of qualifications, knowledge, and ongoing learning are really essential for people in this role to be successful?
Yeah, so this section really digs into what you need to have, in terms of background and continuous development to really thrive in this field. And one point that I found really interesting is they talk about the increasing complexity and in distinguishing between, initial training and further training.
Yeah.
And they attribute that largely to the, widespread adoption of the bachelor's and master's degree system in higher education. It's become more of a like continuum of learning.
Yeah. So instead of having a clear line between, okay, you've completed your initial training, now you're moving on to something completely different, it's become more fluid.
Exactly. It's more like you build on that initial foundation. So a bachelor's degree is often seen as that starting point. And then many professionals will go on to pursue further specialization through a master's degree.
Right. So it's not just a one and done kind of thing.
Nope, not anymore. And they specifically highlight the growing importance of part-time master's programs because these programs allow people to continue working while they're also pursuing that advanced degree.
Yeah, which makes a lot of sense. It allows for this really great blend of practical experience with that more in-depth academic learning.
Exactly. You're not just sitting in a classroom. You're applying what you're learning to real-world situations.
Right. So you're getting that theory and practice all at the same time. And I think that's something that employers are increasingly valuing, right?
Oh, absolutely. And, I think it's led to this really interesting collaboration between companies and universities. Businesses are recognizing the value of these programs for upskilling their workforce, and universities are adapting their offerings to meet that demand for more practical, career-focused education.
So it's almost like those part-time master's degrees are becoming an extension of a company's internal professional development efforts.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to put it. And I think that also kind of leads us into the next part of chapter, which is about competencies. So, on top of those formal qualifications, what are the skills and abilities that make someone truly effective as a personnel developer?
Right, because it's not just about having the degree, it's about having the right skills and mindset.
Exactly. And the chapter kind of breaks down these competencies into a few key areas. They even refer to a table that, outlines different concepts of competency.
Okay.
So they talk about things like self-competence, which is sometimes referred to as personal skills or personality competence. And then they have social competence, which is all about how you interact with others. And then, of course, there's technical competence, which is that professional knowledge and the methods that are specific to the field.
So it's really a mix of those personal attributes, those interpersonal skills, and then the actual, job-related knowledge.
Yeah, you need the whole package to be truly effective. And then one thing they really emphasize is this concept of methodological competence.
Okay. And how is that different from those other categories?
Well, some people might think of methodological competence as just being part of that technical competence, right?
Yeah.
Like, knowing the training techniques and all of that. But this chapter argues that methodological competence is actually a skill that cuts across all of those areas. It's a much broader concept.
So it's not just about knowing the specific techniques,
Yeah.
but it's more about that underlying approach to like problem solving and planning and just how you approach those tasks.
Exactly. It's about how you organize your work, how you analyze problems, how you facilitate group discussions. And these are skills that are relevant whether you're designing a training program, which you could argue is more of that technical skill, or you're resolving a conflict within a team, which is more of a social skill.
Right.
Or even just managing your own time effectively, which is a personal skill.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's about having that structured way of approaching those different challenges.
Absolutely. Now, there's also this other table that they mention in the outline, and it refers to an action-based competency model.
Okay, and how is that different from the categories that we just talked about?
Well, the first model, the one with the three categories and methodological competence cutting across them, that's really focused on those fundamental types of skills: personal, social, and technical. But the action-based model, that takes a different perspective. It centers around this idea of successful action.
Okay, so it's less about just listing out the skills and more about like seeing how those skills translate into actual outcomes.
Exactly. It's more performance-oriented. So instead of just saying, okay, this person has strong communication skills, it's about looking at how effectively they use those communication skills to achieve specific goals in their work.
Right, so it's not just about having the tools, it's about knowing how to use them effectively.
Exactly. And then one other really interesting competency that they highlight is the need for what they call educational consulting competence.
Educational consulting competence.
Yeah, and they bring this up specifically because of the increasing number of employees who are pursuing part-time degrees and other academic qualifications.
Right, so it's like personnel developers need to be able to advise people on their educational choices.
Exactly. They need to understand the different types of programs that are out there, the quality standards of different institutions, how those programs align with career goals, and how they fit into the company's overall development
So
strategy.
it's almost like career counselors in a way.
Yeah, and they
Okay.
need to stay up to date on the educational landscape because it's constantly changing.
Right. It's not just about knowing the internal development opportunities within the company. It's about understanding the external educational options as well.
Exactly. And I think that really highlights how the role of the personnel developer is expanding. They're becoming more strategic, more involved in those long-term career trajectories of their employees.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. It's not just about training people for their current roles, it's about helping them prepare for what's next.
Absolutely. Okay, so now that we've talked about the requirements and competencies, the chapter likely goes on to discuss those typical paths that someone might take to actually become a personnel developer.
Right, because we've talked about what they do and what skills they need, but how do people actually get into this field in the first place?
Well, they probably talk about a variety of educational backgrounds that can lead to this career.
Okay.
So you could have degrees in things like human resources management, business administration with a specialization in training and development, education, psychology, sociology, those kinds of things. And the specific entry points can vary a lot depending on the size of the company, the industry, all sorts of factors.
Yeah, because you could imagine that, a larger company might have a very specific entry-level role that's focused on learning and development.
Right.
But a smaller company might be looking for someone who can wear multiple hats.
Exactly. So they might transition into this area from a broader HR role or even from another department entirely.
So it sounds like there's not really one prescribed path, but there are a few different ways to get your foot in the door.
Yeah, and they probably also talk about the importance of practical experience, which could be gained through things like internships or those entry-level positions in HR or training.
Right, so it's not just about what you know, but also what you've done.
Exactly. You got to have both to really stand out. And of course, as we've already talked about, with those master's programs becoming more and more common, continuous learning is a huge part of this profession.
Right. So once you're in the door, you're not done learning.
No way. The field is always evolving, and personnel developers need to stay ahead of those changes.
So what kinds of further training might they typically engage in?
Well, they'll probably talk about those part-time master's degrees that we mentioned earlier. Those allow people to specialize in areas like talent management, organizational development, or e-learning design, all sorts of really focused areas.
Right. And they often lead to promotions or more specialized roles within the organization.
Exactly. But then they'll also probably talk about things like, attending workshops, going to conferences, getting professional certifications.
Right, because it's not just about formal degrees. It's about staying up to date on those latest trends and best practices.
Exactly. And I think that's really important because, the world of work is changing so rapidly.
Yeah. And so are the tools and technologies that are used in personnel development.
Absolutely. So what are the benefits of this, commitment to lifelong learning?
Yeah, good question. I mean, it seems obvious, but why is it so important for both the individual personnel developer and for the organization that they work for?
Well, I think for the individual, continuous learning leads to career advancement, higher salaries, more opportunities, those sorts of things. It makes them a more valuable asset to their company.
Right.
And then for the organization, investing in the development of their personnel developers means that they have a more skilled, more knowledgeable HR team.
Makes sense.
And that can lead to more effective talent development strategies, increased employee engagement, and ultimately, better business outcomes.
So it really is a win-win situation. The individual benefits, the organization benefits, and ultimately, everyone's better off.
Exactly. It's about creating that culture of learning and development that benefits everyone involved.
So as we wrap up here, I think it's clear that the role of the personnel developer is multifaceted. They wear a lot of different hats.
That's right.
And they are absolutely essential for the success of any organization that wants to grow and adapt in today's rapidly changing world.
Yeah. And what really stood out to me in this chapter is just how much the field of personnel development is evolving.
Yeah.
This focus on proactive strategies, the increasing complexity of education and training options, it really emphasizes the need for personnel developers to be continuous learners themselves.
Yeah, that's a really good point. They need to embody that learner's mindset if they want to effectively guide and support the development of others.
Absolutely.
So this chapter was really insightful. It gave us a really solid foundation for understanding the role of the personnel developer and the many different tasks that they undertake. But of course, this is just one chapter in a much larger book.
That's right. And in our next deep dive, we're going to continue our exploration of this handbook by moving on to the next chapter.
And we're looking forward to unpacking those insights with you. So thanks for joining us today. We'll see you next time.
See you then.